This episode of the Antlers and Hicks podcast is brought to you by Bloodline Custom Calls. I've been a fan of Bloodline Custom Calls for several years now. I've gotten in touch and gotten a good friendship with Jason Cooper and the boys over at Bloodline, and they make some of the best turkey calls I've heard. They also have some outstanding merchandise, so go check them out. BloodlineCustomCalls.com, Facebook, and Instagram. Check out Bloodline Custom Calls. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. It's coming up on bow season. I'm trying to live a life. I'm trying to run trail cameras, trying to get stands set up. And let me tell you something, it is hectic. That's where the Wise Eye Sail Cam comes in handy from Wise Eye Technology. Guys, this camera is the most innovative camera on the market right now. What the camera will do is it will take a picture of deer and text it to you just like any other sail cam does. But what it also does is it sends a system called Hunt Control, the GPS location of where that picture was taken. Hunt Control then looks at the weather, looks at the lunar phase, looks at the wind, looks at everything, and breaks down when this deer was moving and why. Also, if you have multiple Wise Eye cameras in the field and this particular deer you're after walks past those Wise Eyes, they will take a picture of it, put it in a file folder that all the cameras keep up with. Now you have a folder specifically for that deer. That's right. This camera can pick out the deer that you're targeting. It's got a facial recognition system that it recognizes these deer and charts them. Takes out all the legwork that you have to do, simplifies it, tells you when they're moving, so that gives you the best opportunity to get on top of that target animal. They can be found at hogfathers.com and on amazon.com. They can also be bought in person at K&M Coffee Corks and Camo in the great town of Farmerville, Louisiana, out there on the highway going over on Lake Darby on Highway 33. So go check them out. Wise Eye Trail Cams. You got to check them out. They are impressive. Chris Fields. Dude, I've been wanting to do this for a long time. I've known you your whole life because I'm a little older than you are.
Yep.
So give us a background on the man that probably is the only person in Union Parish to have national champion behind his name.
Man, the big thing is Darbone. I mean, that's really what gave it to me, you know. Able to spend a lot of time on the lake, able to fish a lot. So one of the best lakes in the country, and that's what you got to have that opportunity, and then Darbone did that for me.
So growing up, you know, let's give some background. Okay, now we're going to go way back.
Yep.
When people come into Farmerville, they see the T.T. Fields spillway sign. So give us some background on that.
Yeah, so my granddaddy, my dad's dad, was actually a state representative here whenever the lake was, built. And don't get me wrong, now there was a bunch of other people. He wasn't the only person doing it, but he had a major part in getting that done and able to get this beautiful lake that we have and we're able to enjoy every day.
Yeah, man, it's really, you know, I guess growing up, we knew the lake was here, you know. I grew up on the other side of the parish, so I didn't come out to the lake as much as I went to other places. But, you know, you knew it was here. I feel like, honestly, in my opinion, we kind of took it for granted.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's been bad there, taking it for granted for sure. We've been lucky and been able to get to where we are right now. And it's not just fishing. I mean, you think about what goes on with the 4th of July. The people that are on this lake on a weekend, it's nothing compared to when we were kids.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, and I'm going to go way back. You know, the Folly Beach days was about the only thing I knew about Lake Darbone. You know, you would come across and there'd be cars lined up and people out there having a good time. And, you know, and then we came in and I caught I was older than I'm going to kind of date myself. Caught the tail end of that.
Yeah.
But that was all we knew of Darbone.
Yeah. And I didn't get that part. You know, I didn't get the people enjoying it that much. It was almost like for a while, it really wasn't utilized at all, you know, on anything compared to the way it is used now.
Yeah. I think the first time I even really thought anything of our lake, somebody had caught a state record bass.
Right.
And that's, I'm like, oh, there's fish like that in the lake.
Yeah.
You know, and then I think Johnny Anderson, who was a cousin of mine, was hoop. I don't even know the hoop net in the lake anymore.
Yeah. I see him from time to time out there. Okay. Yeah, he's out there. He's still hoop nets out there.
And I mean, we pulled in like, I can't remember how many 30, 40 pound Opelousa.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, we do this. It takes a whole year to get this on the bayous. We're fishing. So, you know, then it started kind of getting on my mind a little bit. But, you know, I think what we are seeing right now is the start of something really special here.
Yeah, it is. And like I said, we've been lucky enough to enjoy it all our life, and people are really seeing what we have here and the town of Farmville. You know, everybody loves Farmville. A lot of people come from out of state, and they just love the town of Farmville and love the lake.
Yeah, they get that mega ramp. You know, we're at K&M Coffee, Corks, and Camo, just so everybody knows. And, you know, the proposal is a mega ramp. Been a proposal for a mega ramp on Lake Darbon for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of were scared that, you know, they're just, you know, talking. And I think now it's really gaining some ground.
Yeah, there's some, you know, there's always been people, rumors, I guess, but but it's kind of coming public now, it seems like. So, man, that'd be even better for the town.
It really will, you know. Get some places for some of the guys that do what you do while we're talking today. Bring some people in to really show their, I guess you could say, like the kids say, they flex.
That's right.
When it comes to crappie fishing. So, Chris Fields, as a young man, how did you grow up?
Right here on in Farmerville. I was born overseas, but I came home. I don't remember being over there. I came home at a young age and been here ever since. You know, I've gone off traveling, working, stuff like that, but I'm pretty much born and raised here. Graduated high school here. Played baseball at Arnett Smith.
Yeah, that was some good days, man. What I was telling somebody the other day, that back in the day, Arnett Smith was the Sterlington sports complex of this area.
It really was. It really was. And that's a lot to say about, you know, my dad was working a lot and didn't get involved. But, I mean, the Kim Cranfords, the Bruce Hamptons, the Lonnie Cross and your side.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of those guys.
You know, we're sitting here and you get to thinking about it, that was 100%, if I'm not mistaken, families that raised money, worked it, like it's, man, it was such a good atmosphere back then.
It was, man, and honestly, with where we are in our life now, I don't know how they did it.
I'm telling you the truth, bro. That's what I was telling somebody the other day. You know, if we needed money at school for air conditioners, I mean, dude, we were selling everything short of illegal drugs, trying to get some air conditioning at the school. And you know, our folks, really, we have a great community right here.
Yes, we do. We do. And it's me and you, we've got to do what those guys did, because they've done it, and we need to do it.
And that's kind of what, you know, that's what I'm trying to do with this podcast and with the buck contest we do here at K&M, is just do a community-minded event where people can come and have a good time and promote things in our area.
Yep.
So talking about baseball, now a lot of folks don't know this about you, man. You're a pretty good little baseball player.
I played a little bit.
Yeah? So tell us about your ball playing.
Yeah, so again, I was grew up at Arnett Smith like most guys our age did, and played baseball at Farmville High School and graduated there and went on to play a couple years of college baseball at LSU Eunice and Louisiana Tech. And be honest, Union Parish got to be. I mean, the hunting and fishing, they say when you get to that level, you got to love it, and that's the truth, you know. And I just love the outdoors more than I like baseball. So,
and there's a reason I just asked you that question.
Yeah,
I was talking with Jay Snell with Marion State Bank. He came over to the house at night. We shot bows and grilled, and I know we didn't grill. We were going to grill, but you know, we ate fried chicken instead.
There you go.
And watching an LSU game. And I told him, I said, yeah, I really want to talk with Fields about, you know, the crappie fishing. He said, man, you know, he said he was a great ball player. He said, but the hunting and fishing is why he gave it up. And I mean, I was just, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, you know, I can believe it. You know, of course, I'm a small frame person.
Right.
You know, and I wanted to play football so bad when I was in seventh grade, Chris, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And I remember, and it wasn't the physicality part and of the football as and my size as much as that football cut into me squirrel hunting after school.
Right.
And my daddy would not let me quit in the seventh grade. I had to suffer in my squirrel hunting. I mean, I remember, they're out there coaching And I'm turned around and I'm looking in them woods down there at the old middle school. I'm looking at all that. I'm like, man,
cat squirrel,
there's squirrels out there. Well, and I'm, you know, and it's just, I guess when it's something that you're passionate about, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, yep. You just, it's hard to get away from it.
Right, right. And that was a big thing. You know, I love fishing and hunting, and I didn't love baseball as much. So that's where I come in.
And at that level, I guess that's the level that separates that separates everybody. Yeah.
Being good and loving it. That's the difference. You know, there's everybody's good at that level. It's just, you have to love it.
That's what Jay was saying. He said, man, when I was at ULM, he said, you really see, you know, you're used to being one of the best on your team.
Right.
And then when you get there and there's somebody that can hit it farther and somebody who could throw it harder and somebody who can run faster, he said, man, it's a humbling experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it is for sure.
So after, when you finally gave up baseball, what happened?
Graduated with Tech with a construction engineering degree, went to work. I'm a work on a pipeline. So, you know, like everybody else, you got to get out there. So probably about 5 years on and off, or for the majority of 5 years, I worked in the field. You know, I've been in Texas. I've been essentially from Oregon to North Carolina to Florida to Texas. I've been all over. And that's kind of where I got then, and then kind of settled in and got up work, same company, and I work here in West Monroe. So able to get back to the house, and then I really started getting back into it as far as hunting and fishing, which I still did it then. Mm-hmm. I just didn't get the opportunity to do it as much as I would love to, and I get to now.
So, what was your, has crappie fishing always been your passion?
Every time. I mean, since I was a kid, I bet you I hadn't caught 20 bass out of that lake. Well, I say that I hadn't caught 20 bass on purpose out of that lake. So I'll catch them from time to time, but I hadn't caught them on purpose. But I've always loved it, and that's what I've always wanted to do. Now I like to catch a bream too, but those bass I leave them alone.
Hey man, it's so funny. One of my buddies was in a helicopter the other day. They were doing some training, and they flew over. It looked like a little, well, I'd say it was a pretty nice little pond. I mean, it was probably, you know, 10, 12 acre pond. And as the helicopter's coming down, all you could see was brim beds.
Wow.
And I wasn't like, man, that's a cool experience. I was like, man, look at those brim beds.
Yeah, that's right. I don't do it very much, but I definitely like to.
Yeah.
I definitely like to.
So coming into crappie fishing, so it was just natural for you. Did your dad, did he?
No, actually, I'd have to give the credit to, my grandfather, T.T. Fields here, he was an outdoorsman. He hunted, he fished, but he died at a young age for me. You know, I'm the youngest. My dad's, they had him old, and I'm the youngest of three. So he's pretty up in age, and he died when I was young, I think 8 or 9 years old. And we grew up on Corny Creek Drive, and actually, there's no doubt in my mind, my first crappie was caught in the boat with Mr. K. I don't know if you know who that is, but that's Bruce Hampton's father-in-law.
Really?
Yeah. He lived across the road from us, and we would go. I'd walk over there and get in his boat, and we'd go fishing a lot, and we'd fish off his dock, and that's where it really happened. I mean, I fished with him all the time.
So he was like kind of like a grandfather figure?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's interesting.
So he, you know, till I probably got in high school or so, that's who I'd fished, you know, from that 9, 10-year-old to I got in high school. That's who I'd fish with a good bit.
Wow.
Yep.
So, but he was a good crappie fisherman.
Yeah, yeah, he was. He was.
Before there was any kind of sonar.
Yeah. We definitely did a little bit different than we do now.
Yeah, and, you know, that's something that the past week at the Pro-Am, when the legislators came up, I have heard for several years of the, you know, the live scopes and whatnot like that. And Steve Adams, you know, we were videoing, and I hope the video makes. I don't know if, you know, they're editing it. I don't know how it's going to look. But if it looks good, I think it'll really be something for the lake to promote it. But Steve, he told me, he said, get over here in this boat. I want to show you this.
Right.
And I had heard you could see your lure. I had heard you could see the fish moving. It's one thing to hear it.
Right.
It's a whole different ballgame to see it. And you're just like, wow.
Yeah.
That is impressive.
Yeah, it's very, it's game changing. I mean, it's night and day different than what we did before. We used to, I mean, I say before, I'm talking 4 years ago, you would put eight poles out and float arounds essentially.
And that's a funny thing you say that, because I used to live off Stowe Creek.
Right.
In the flat where the run split.
Right.
I mean, I was right there by Pier 15.
Yep.
And, you know, there would be boats out there with poles, and this is 2015, 2016 right. when I moved over there. There were boats, like you said, they're spider rigging all yep. out through there. And I'm like, what? I had never seen, I said, what in the yeah. world? First thing I thought was, number one, how's he not getting hung up on every stump in the country?
He was. Yeah, he was.
And then number two, how do you manage it if you catch two or three fish at the same time?
Yeah, and you don't. So, yeah, it was definitely a different. And be honest with you, I wasn't real great at it. It just wasn't real entertaining and real fun to me. I like to have a pole in my hand.
You like to feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was good to transition for me for sure, because I didn't like the floating around, you know, yeah. essentially.
Now, you deer hunt as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you're doing that in the off season, and then, or do you still crappie fish during deer season?
Yeah, so we will fish the big. We'll fish them bigger. They kind of slow down, but we'll fish again the first week in October, and we'll fish. There's a big one coming to Lake Darbonne. I think it's the first week of December. So we will fish those. That's going to be tough. I typically don't fish the month of November.
Yeah, just for obvious reasons.
We all know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. If there's anybody listening not from North Louisiana, there are about three ruts in Louisiana, and the main rut is Thanksgiving around the end. It could vary from the middle of November all the way through the first part of December, and that's where we are. And it's when it's over, when that stops.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the woods are almost silent.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
You got to get them. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So. But that's cool. You bow hunt?
Used to. I don't do it too much anymore. I actually biggest deer I ever killed was with my bow.
Really?
Yep.
How big is he?
He's not that big. You know, 130, low 130s.
Well, hey, I'm an official scorer for Buckmasters.
Yeah.
And our minimum criteria for an archery kill to reach the record book is 110 inches without the inside spread. So if he's a 130-inch deer, if he ain't got a 20-inch spread, you're good.
Yeah, so yeah, I could probably make it then.
Bring it up here to K&M. We're going to be scoring on Thursday nights. Bring him up here one night. I'll take a look at it.
Okay.
I tell everybody, it ain't got to be a record book for me to score. I like sitting here. I like talking to people. I like to hear experiences. Yep. And that's what I was brought up on, just talking about deer hunting. We weren't worried about no score.
Yeah, that's the way I am. You know, I'd rather kill a what I'll call a decent buck, 120-ish deer here than anywhere in the country.
I
it's
agree
on
that.
My land. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to deal with that, and I can go tell the story down the road. So
your first tournament, mm-hmm. tell me what that experience was like. Your first anything tournament. You remember?
Yeah, I do. I do. Actually, I was 16 years old. Me and Derek Albritton. Fished a crappie USA tournament here on the lake. And I think we didn't catch all of our fish. We caught a cold front. It was in March. A cold front came through. It was really, really, really cold in March. And everybody knows about what that does to crappie whenever they're trying to catch them shallow, because that's what we try to do. Mm-hmm. And we didn't catch all our fish, but we actually had better fish than most people did. I think we probably finished fifth or sixth, something like that. And I liked it. I tried to tell Derek to move, but he would never move. If he had moved, we'd have been all right. But, yeah. So I'm going to blame that on him.
Okay. Yeah. So, Derek, you should have moved.
That's right.
When the man that's won two national championships tells you to move now, I think he'd probably move now.
Yeah, he might now. Well, I wouldn't listen to him. I'd just move.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, because you're going to be in control.
That's right.
So how did it – after that, you started going, and did you compete regularly in tournaments, or was it just something you tried?
It was here, so we fished. And be honest with you, there wasn't any tournaments to have. There wasn't tournaments on Darbonne. We had very few, maybe one a year or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's really the first one. And then after that, again, probably I'd say in 2015, 16 time frames, I think that's the first time Crappie Masters came to Darbonne. Mm-hmm. And we fished then, and again, we did that one spider rigging. And we didn't do very well. And actually, a big storm came through and we left, but we weren't too hardcore. But at that point, I decided, or me and my buddy Jared Reiser, we kind of we had a tournament coming up that was in a February tournament, and we just said we're going to fish like we regularly do. You know, we're going to go hold two poles and we're going to go fishing. And we did that, and people think we're crazy. We did that, and whenever we did that, we ended up in 12th or so out of 100 or so teams, and that was us just doing it, holding it in our hands. Everybody else was spider rigging, and we just
went back with what you knew.
Yep, that's right.
And that's kind of what we were just talking about when we walked up. You know, tactics and strategies make for good conversation.
Right.
But when you want to get down to brass tacks and get it done, you're going to go with what you're most confident with.
Everything. You know, if you're not confident in something, you might as well. In competitive. You know, that's the best time to go. If you're not confident in something and you're going to practice, go practice.
That's right.
But if you're not confident and you're doing something competitive, you better not do it. But don't even show up, you know, because it's not going to work.
That's right. So, I mean, there's so many questions I want to ask, man, because, you know, I got to hang out with you guys last week.
Right.
And I was telling Wesley Miller via text message, because I was, you know, doing these crappie podcasts is something now that I see you guys and get a little bit of, you know, knowing y'all. And it's almost like a brotherhood in a way.
Right.
Like a family. You get that cousin family. They picking on each other, ribbing on each other. And then, I mean, you know, I heard some really good positive comments. Man, that was great. You know, just really good stuff
right.
coming from you guys. So it's a good atmosphere.
Yeah, you know, I'd compare it a lot to, I mean, you played sports. You mm-hmm. know how you were on a team.
Absolutely.
You give people a hard time, and then that's the fun part, giving them a hard time. But whenever something happens good, you give them a good, you know, it's all like a brotherhood, like you said.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about your partner.
Yep.
The man of few words. That's why he's not on. I knew not even ask Jarhead to come out.
Yeah.
I mean, he would just sit there.
Hey, I'm starting to get into though. He's starting to talk. He's
well, I tell you around. What, y'all keep winning some tournaments, he's going to have to.
That's right. He's going to have to.
He's going to have to start doing something, you know. He's going to be like, he kind of reminds me sometimes of John Godwin, you know, because he don't talk a whole lot, but every so often he'll cut up and he'll go with you. But
yeah.
So when did he start? So Derek was your first.
Yeah.
And then Jared came.
Yeah,
in.
Jared. So in college, actually, Darren, me and Jared, I've known Jared, you know this, as well as most of the people that listen that are around here. I've known Jared since I was 4 years old, we played baseball together. But he went to Cedar Creek. I went to Farmville. We really weren't that close, I wouldn't say, friends in high school and such. But he came back in we went to college at Tech and over there, and we kind of started duck hunting and stuff together. So from duck hunting, from there, we started crappie fishing together and then went on from there and just kept fishing and hunting together. And then as we started competing, he started competing with us.
So he started fishing with you. Was he a better partner than Derek?
Well, I don't know. You put me
on the
spot.
I put you on the spot, then. That's a loaded question.
So, yeah, if we go hogging, so we used to hog on the lake too.
Uh-huh.
I'll put Derek up against him. But white perch, yeah, he's probably a better partner than Derek, I'd say.
Well, good. That's good.
But I'm trying to train Derek too, so I've took him a few times and answered a few questions. So he might catch him one day.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, man, it's I saw you when you were fishing with Mr. Bob. Wasn't that his name?
Yeah. Yep.
And I mean, he was. I think you could catch fish with Mr. Bailey right there. I mean, you guys were doing some. How many fish did y'all have in?
We probably caught 30 or so that day.
And I don't think, if I'm not mistaken, very few people caught more than just what they weighed in.
Right, right.
So, I mean, but there again, that's knowing the lake, knowing where
yeah,
to go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, yeah. It's almost, you know, I ain't going to say cheating.
Yeah, that's right.
You got an upper hand advantage for
oh,
sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. And he had a good time. And I was trying to get him to catch a lot of fish. You know, I'd catch a few fish here and there. Really all I was doing was just making sure they were biting, you know.
Yeah.
Other than that, just putting them on them.
So, when you go to other lakes,
right?
Does that even the feel for you?
It depends. So, I mean, you know, like we got an advantage here on Darbone. Everywhere you go, somebody's got an advantage.
Somebody's going to have an advantage, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'll be honest with you, sometimes being on a home lake is tough because you know so much, right? You're not catching a fish here. Well, let's run there. Next thing you know, you've been running all day and you're not catching anything.
Yeah.
So I make sure to – that we don't do that too much, to the point of sometimes we have to run. You know, it helps then, but if we know they're fishing a certain area, we got to buckle down to stay in the spot. So I think it's kind of tough.
Yeah.
Whenever you're on your home lake.
So when you went to Ouachita on Lake, Ouachita River.
Right.
Tell me about that experience. Had you fished Ouachita a whole lot?
I don't. Everybody says, you know, it's a home body of water for us or me, but it's definitely not. It's other than being able to sleep in my bed, we don't fish it. It's just a tough. It's not. It can be great. The Ouachita River can be the funnest water body in this country to fish. But at the same time, you know as well as I do that Ouachita River changes every day.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
So it's up and down, and
yeah.
It's
and I fished it every time I fish it. It's different. You know, I won one. I won the individual last year, and it was at 33 in Monroe. Then we won the one this year, and I think it was at about 28. You know, then we fished another one before, and it was at 24 that we got second place in. I mean, it's just, and I'm talking about water levels in Monroe. So,
right.
So it's just a change in body water.
Now, the way I believe they control it is from the Felsenthal Lock and Dam. They can control the water levels.
Right. In Columbia.
In Columbia. That's right. So it's got two ends. You know, it can either come in quick or go out quick. And I'm sure it probably can get kind of hard for them to regulate, you know, consistently at times.
Oh, yeah. It's never, like I said, other than whenever it gets to pool in the summertime, you don't get any rain. It's never the same.
So when you go to a new place, how do you approach it?
Right now, just like you would deer hunting, really. I mean, we have Navionics on these lakes, and you can see the it's like a contour map, 1 foot contour on the whole lake. I've always fished more in spawning as I grew up, so I feel like really I can go catch fish that are spawning anywhere. So I gear towards that. And when I say I gear towards that, I first go and look at where I think they would be in March when they're spawning. And then from there, you know, even if it's August, you can kind of go out from there and figure out where they would be at in August. But if I can key into where I feel like a lot of crappie are, that's what I do. And then I go out from there.
That's interesting. You know, and I'm sitting here thinking Navionics, and again, that's technology.
Right.
And then we've got, like you just said, with deer hunting, we've got technology with Onyx, with hunting. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, man. We're living in a time where I don't want to say making it easier. We're just changing the game a little bit.
Yeah.
Making it a little bit different from what, you know, right, our grandfathers had.
Right. So you're making yourself more successful, right?
Yeah.
But the only thing is competitive fishing, the next guy's
everybody else has
the same.
Got the same stuff. Yeah. And that's where the competitive part,
right,
because they're not only do they have the same stuff, they've got the same knowledge of what y'all are fishing.
That's right.
So that's where it really kind of, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, somebody said in the baseball era, everybody was using the steroid era in baseball. Everybody's using steroids. It's not like they were leveling or doing anything with the playing field.
Right.
And so everybody's got the same advantage. That's cool. Yep. So now, again, I'm a novice on this stuff.
Yep.
So when I see the different screens on your boat, what are they?
Yeah, so I'll have typically all I have other than LiveScope is mapping. So I'll have LiveScope up and I'll have a map with the contours. So that it also tracks you. So the Ouachita River is one place that does not have Navionics. You don't have any contours to that.
Why is that? Is it because they're so close to a chemical plant they don't want any kind of stuff?
Probably
like
so.
That? I mean,
probably so. Now, honestly, it just doesn't draw a lot of people to they probably is not work because they come out here and survey the lake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it doesn't have enough, I guess, appeal to, to fishermen to do it. So, yeah, so that's what I'll have. And also a big thing, but now on the Ouachita River, big thing, I'm a pretty particular person when it comes to fishing. I will what I call grid stuff out, right? So I'll have my GPS there and I can see where I've been, where I'm going, and trail where I've caught fish. So I'm out nonstop playing with that as far as, you know, I don't want to run a line and turn around and run the same line again. So
yeah, okay.
And then LiveScope. Everybody knows LiveScope.
So while we're on that topic, how hard is it to understand when you're looking at the screen on LiveScope? Tell me about that type of technology.
Now it's easier. And the reason I say it's easier is because so many people have YouTube channels. They have stuff that you can get on Facebook or YouTube, and you can see what to look for in settings, stuff like that. When I first got it, there's times I was about ready to quit. I told my wife a time or two, I'm going to throw it off and I'm not going to use it anymore. Mm-hmm. But I run across a stump spider rigging and tore everything off, and I decided against it. So, but, you know, now to go catch fish, you could probably do it in a couple weeks if you spend time with it. Mm-hmm. To get good at it, it's once you can read it, it's not being good at seeing fish. It's good at how to catch fish, how to get the jig in front of a fish.
Right.
So
that was another thing I wanted to ask you. What percentage of your success do you attribute to the live scope?
99. I'd say 99. Really? Yep.
Okay.
I mean, it's that good. And the reason I say that is I really didn't start putting in a lot of time trying different things until I got live scope, right? Because before, you know, you go out spider rigging or something like that, and you're going slow, you know, and then now you can go so fast and try so many different things. And I'm not saying I wouldn't have got better at spider rigging. I just didn't have the interest really to do it, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I tell you, you know, to hear you say 99%, man, that's a high percentage, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, you still have to know where fish are. You still have to know, think about fish. And the reason I say 99 is mainly because it made me go more.
That's what I was going to ask. It, kind of like trail cameras when you're hunting. I mean, you don't want to hunt a certain stand if you don't, man, there ain't nothing out. But if you got that one deer, it keeps you in the woods. Same principle with the live scope. It'll make you a little bit more, okay, I can at least find something and get on them.
Yeah, and it's done a lot as far, it's a lot towards, I wouldn't say it's an athletic event, but it's a, you know, before you didn't sit there and move and have to put something right on top of it, but it's just like baseball. Just like football, you know, the more you do it, the better you get at it as far as getting the jig there, right? So I'm not talking about as far as seeing a live scope and seeing what's there. I can do that tomorrow if I hadn't been there for 6 months, but I couldn't catch as many fish if I, you know, you get out of practice and stuff like that. And that's happened to us before, you know, life happens and you're not out there for a month or two and then you go out there fishing and you're just not as good as you should be or were.
Hey, I tell you, I saw that firsthand with Steve Adams. Rolled up on Steve to do an interview, and him and Miss Debbie Villio, and I knew something was up right off the bat because Debbie was fishing in the back of the boat, and I'm like, this ain't normal, you know, because crappie fishermen, you got two people, they're going to be sitting side by side up in the front of the boat.
Right.
And I asked her, I said, Miss Debbie, why are you sitting in the back? She said, because I'm getting mad at that screen because I can see the fish. They're there. They just won't bite. Yeah. And so people think you got live scope, you know, it's almost, and it helps, but it still doesn't make that fish take that lure.
No, there's
so much more to it than just.
Yeah, there's, it's not as easy as everybody thinks it is. If you've never done it, it's not as easy as everybody thinks it is.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy, I don't want to say his name, but he swears up and down. He said, man, it's just a tool.
Yep.
He says, it's just enough. You can't depend on that scope for everything. It's a tool that you use, but you still have to have your own things that you've learned about fishing to make you successful in tournaments.
Yeah. And just like I was talking about, you know, going to a new lake and finding what you're comfortable with, I'd start the same spot. If I didn't have live scope, I'd start the same spot without live scope. So it's the front end stuff that doesn't change.
I got you.
You know.
Who do you think in y'all's crappie tournament world, who's the man? And I know you're humble, so you're not going to say yourself.
It's definitely not me. So I'll tell you the evolution of it, right? So I have a stepson that's 15 now. So about 4 years ago, it was Robert Carlisle. The reason I'm bringing up him, he reminded me every tournament, that old man, Robert's, I'm not, if you're listening, Robert, I'm not calling you old, but you're old to him. And Robert's probably in his mid-50s. So he said, that old man keeps beating you every time. That's Robert Carlisle. So I put a goal was to beat Robert Carlisle. So I beat Robert Carlisle. And then it evolved to Matthew Rogers. I don't know if you know Matthew. Everybody, oh, yes, I do. The crappie world knows Matthew. He's national champion. He's won probably 10 tournaments if I had to bet. So then it was Matthew Rogers, and he always beat me. You know, again, I was reminded that, hey, now that little kid always beat you. So then it was Matthew Rogers, and actually the individual national championship on the Washita River, I beat him, and I remind him of that. So he was at the top now. Then I would say that was probably a year ago. Now I'd say that the top to beat, now all three of these are going to be hard to beat anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I would say Matthew has competition now with Hayden Jeffries. Yeah. He's a young guy. He actually came over here for the tournament.
I got to meet him. Real nice.
I mean, he's 20 years old. I say 20. He's early 20s. He's not much younger than Matthew, but him and Matthew are probably there neck and neck as when you show up, you know that's who you want to beat. So that's how I essentially started getting competitive, was find out that one guy it is, and then you want to be that, you want to compete with that guy. Right. If you can compete with that guy, you compete with everybody.
I got you. So let's talk about the first, which was the first national championship you had.
Last year on the Washita River, the 2021 individual national championship for Crappie Masters.
Okay, so going into that tournament, how confident were you?
Not very. Again, the Washita River is a hard pill to swallow. It was a 3-day tournament, and I was able to get in some spots really hard to get into. And you know as well, if I had two tents drop, I couldn't even get in them. And you know, a lot of people were talking to me. You know, I duck hunted the Washita River a lot. People were like, oh, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. You know as well as I do, it can drop that in an hour. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the first one I won, and it was – I wasn't real confident because if I couldn't get in there, I was going to be in trouble.
Did you know when you were out there, when you were headed to the weigh-in, did you know, I got a shot, I got a chance?
Day three, mm-hmm. Yes, I did. Because, I mean, I honestly had a goal to set whenever I was going in there day three. I got in, so that lifted off, and I had a goal, and I exceeded that goal of what I wanted, and I was pretty confident that nobody could catch me then.
So how did it feel to have that under your belt?
Man, it was life. I wouldn't say life changing by any means, but it was just good to know that, hey, all the work, you can compete with anybody in the country. And again, you know, we won one on Darbone, but the Washita Rivers, we fished against the best, on that one, I fished against the best people out there. And, it wasn't a home body of water, because I get that, you know.
Yeah.
That's home body of water.
Yeah.
You know.
So, now, the ACT, where'd you win that at?
Washita River.
Okay, I'm sorry. Crappie Masters, where'd you
both
win?
Of them.
Both of them was on Washita.
So, I won, well, national championship. I won an ACT national championship on Darbone. Mm-hmm. We won that. And then we won a national qualifier for ACT on the Washita River. And then we won the Crappie Masters individual on the Washita River. Mm. Does that kind of confusing, right?
No. I mean, it's to hear you say that you're not as confident on the river, but yet you've won two national tournaments on the river.
Right.
You know, I'm kind of like, come on, man, that's contradicting yourself. You should be, that should be your bread and butter.
Oh, honestly, if you put, I keep a record of all of it. The Washita River by far is a better body of water for us. I mean, in 2020, we got a second place in American Crappie Trail in there as well. Mm-hmm. But you just never feel confident about that river.
Because of the differences
right.
you can make.
I got
you. So when you just said you keep a record, what you mean, what kind of record are you keeping?
You know, how we finished, you know, a lot of the Washita River, I keep water levels and stuff like that. Darbone, I know pretty well because just on it all the time. But I keep water levels, Washita River, keep how much money I spend and how much is coming in and going out, you know.
Golly, you're almost like an accountant.
I try. I mean, I'm a project manager for major projects, so I have to keep up with money, so I might as well keep up with my own.
That's right. Now, you know, at the end, I don't know, you probably haven't heard my podcast, but at the end of my podcast, I end with 3 points that have made this person successful in what they do. The main point that I hear from you is details.
Yes, for sure.
You've got to know, you've got to cover every detail. That's interesting.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's in every aspect of life, whether it's fishing or hunting.
That's anything. Anything you want to be successful at, you have got to be disciplined, and you've got to be paying attention to the details and everything. How far off do you travel?
We've been, so this year, last year, we hadn't been this year, but last year we went to Truman Lake, was about 8 hours from here. You know, it's a really big lake. That's probably the furthest we've traveled. Next year we will fish the Elites, which will be, we'll probably end up going to Truman again, the farthest we'll travel.
So tell me about Truman. How do you do on it?
We didn't do great. I think we ended up in 12th or 13th out of about 60 or 70 boats. Mm-hmm. You know, big thing we have to learn. So Darbon's fish, if you heard around here much, we're really spooky fish. So what we learned on Truman was fishing other lakes aren't spooky. So we were trying to fish at a slow pace to catch fish, and we figured out on day two that we didn't have to do that. So I think on the day two, we actually had probably, I think, the second or third biggest stringer that day, just because we figured it out, but we figured it out too late.
Too late, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's, I'm telling you, man, I it's so interesting to me to hear you talk about this stuff, because it's almost like finding out a whole different person. I've never talked to you about fishing before.
Right.
You know, and man, you really have this down to a science of how to do it. It's just actually, is this going to work where we're going to go?
Right. Right.
And just like anything else, if you're not being successful, you've got to make an adjustment.
Yep. That's right. And you got to keep your, you know, it's like everything in life. If you better keep your head straight, because, you can get flustered. And that's where I would say Jared is the best. He's better than me than that. Because I'll get flustered and I'll get mad and he'll calm me down. You know, Joel.
Yeah. And that's one thing about him that I really admire, always have. He's as even keeled. And I'm not, bro.
No.
I'm the total opposite. I'll lose my cool in a minute. Yeah. And Jared, you know, I can totally see where that personality right there with you. Because you're going to feed off you're going to feed off your partner.
Right. Yep.
And if he's cool, calm, and collected, that'll bring you back down, bring you back into your game, and you can stay full.
He does it. I'd almost say almost once a tournament. You know, if we got a 2-day tournament, he's probably done it once.
So, live scope's a very important part.
Right.
You think that crappie fishing in a tournament is a mental game as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've fished them before. And be honest with you, the ACT that's on Grenada last week, I got a lot going on. We're moving into a new house here on the lake, a lot going on at work. And I told Jared, I'm going to call him Jar.
Call him Jar. Folks, at a very young age, Jared received the nickname Jarhead. And it has stuck. And I'm talking about he was 2-3 years old probably. He wasn't very old at all.
Yeah.
And just locally, he's known Jarhead.
Yep.
So anybody see him on a tournament, Jarhead. Everybody should know him as Jarhead. So,
and I told him, I was like, man, I'm just got too much going on, and I knew that it would essentially be a waste for us to go, because I got a lot going on at work. I got a lot going on at the house. I'm kind of mentally exhausted, and I knew I'd have a lot of phone calls while we were there. So it's just not worth going to waste your time. So just because of the mental aspect, you got to be ready to go when you go.
Are you mentally exhausted after a tough tournament?
Yeah, I'd say, I don't know. I feel more almost relief no matter what happens, which is kind of crazy. Cause you've been building up. A lot of times you fish four or five days, you know, hard. And then you fish 2 or 3 days for the tournament hard and you love it. I love it. I love the competition of it, but then you're almost a relief that it's over.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to think about where I'm going tomorrow. You don't have to think about, am I catching enough weight? You just go back to work.
Oh, man, I tell you. So you got a young person coming in, somebody that's listening to this, that him and their buddy, they're like, man, I think we could do this. How do they get started?
Get on the water. You know, like I said, it doesn't matter. Even if you don't have live scope, you can learn a lot. It doesn't matter what you're doing. you can learn a lot fishing just by being on the water and going. No different than, you know, me and you hunting and fishing as or hunting as kids. You know, the more you're out there, the more you understand, and don't think that you're going to go out there and just
tear the world
tear
up.
The head. Yeah, you're not going to go out there and tear their heads off. Just go and spend some time. If you're lucky enough to have live scope, you know, spend a lot of time with it, and you'll be good.
All right. So I know this is with what you do is you got a lot of help from sponsors.
Yeah.
You want to name a few of them real quick?
Yes. Yeah, so obviously K&M here, you know, they're great. They'll help any way they can. And be honest, I just wanted to be with K&M just because they not just support us, they support the whole crappie world, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you got those guys will, they won't know hardly anybody, and they'll go to a fishing, a crappie weigh-in. They just love the sport, and least I can do is try to help and get their name out there when I can. You know, now they don't need me. You know, they everybody knows K&M.
Yeah, a lot of people know K&M.
Yeah. So, and then I got HH Rods and Reels. Those guys make great rods, great reels. Use them. That's all I use. That's all that's in my boat. That's all that's ever in my boat. And then Ludwig Marine. Mm-hmm. So those guys, you can imagine, they're the pit crew. I call Gary. I can't tell you how, if you hear me in a way, and a lot of times I'm either thanking Gary or I'm telling Gary that I didn't need him, and I was finally a week that I didn't need him. So those guys too. And actually not a sponsor, but just a good guy and turned stuff around for me quick is the Mudhole Crappie Jigs, Ron Johnson. He ties the best jig that I'm, far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying that other people don't tie good jigs, but I won some of his jigs probably 2 years ago in a drawing at a tournament and hadn't used anything since.
No, we don't.
There's nothing else in my boat.
Where's he out of?
He's out of Princeton, Louisiana.
Okay.
Yep. And he's got them here at K&M. K&M stocked up with them, got tons of them. So.
Okay. Well, there you go, folks. You know where to come get your hand-tied jigs right here at K&M Coffee, Corks, Camo in Farmerville. And like I always tell them on the videos, right there on the going out on the highway, going out to the lake. Everybody knows what the highway, you know, say everybody, local folks.
Right.
The highway going out toward the lake. So, yep. Chris, thank you, man. This is the first fishing podcast I've ever done. I hope it ain't the last. I don't think it'll be the last.
Yeah.
I met a pile of good people last week, and, you know, I've already reached out to a few of them to kind of, you know, see their what they think about it and if we can make a go of it. And I think we could. We may even have to change the name from Antlers and Hicks to Antlers, Hooks, and Hicks or something like that.
Hey, you might have to. It's a big deal, and I appreciate being here, man, and I'm glad I could be your first, and hopefully I'm not your last, and you can make it go from there.
Thank you, bud. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
So I tell you guys all the time, this was my favorite podcast, and it really was my favorite podcast. This one right here is just, I guess because I've known Chris for so long, we got to sit down and got to catch up. And it was really good to hear what he's been through and how he approaches fishing these major tournaments. So some things I want you to think about, details. If you're going to be successful in life, in anything, guys, you have got to pay attention to the details. Number one, that's why he was so successful as a baseball player. That's something that he really kind of hit on just really lightly. The young man can play some ball, okay? He just didn't go out there and throw a baseball and come home. No, it was Chris Fields was a good, solid ball player because he paid attention to the details. That transitions over into fishing. He's paying attention. He approaches it in the same manner. The next thing, pride. Guys, you have got to remember when you start becoming prideful, when you start saying that you thinking you're the best and your chest is poked out, that's when things are going to start happening. The Bible says when pride comes, then also comes disgrace. But with humility comes wisdom. And if you listen enough, you can tell Chris is very humble. He's very knowledgeable. And he is a very, very, very solid guy. And I am glad to call him a friend. I'm also glad to say he's from Union Parish. So that's all for this week's podcast, guys. My name is Greg Hicks. This is the Antlers and Hicks podcast. And I want to always encourage you guys to live life past 20 yards. I'll see you next time.